Okay, so you guys all heard this is a Java programming class, right? We call it Java Madness. Because
5 weeks.
That's right. 5 weeks, 4 nights a week. You have to be working all the time. This is not one of those classes where you can go, oh, that's okay, I'll do it at the end. If you can say, okay, I'll do it at the end, that means you already know it. You can do it at the beginning and save yourself 5 weeks. Okay? Fair enough? Okay, this is, oh, look. I guess you guys missed the deadline for your assignment. So we'll start over. Jim Knighton, that's my name. That makes it easier to see, huh? I wish I thought of that. That is my website, and then you click on Java, and it shows the course outline and the assignments and whatnot. And what else? My email address. That's my phone number. Don't call it because I don't answer it. Well, sometimes I pick it up and it's going beep, 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 meaning I have a voice. And then I find out that there was something critical that happened a long time ago. Okay, you can communicate with me like at this address regularly. I help you with your homework. Via email, for example, you can turn in your assignments by email, etc. Okay. All of the class handouts are here. I don't give you anything. If you want to print it out, download it, print it out. There's a version of each of the assignments. You should be aware that those versions of the assignments, because they run on the internet, have to be written as what are called applets, and I'll talk to you about what those are. But do not copy and try and use that code in your assignments as an example, because it won't work right. First of all, it's old code. Secondly, it's an applet that has a completely different method of being called and functioning. All it shows you is what the assignment might look like, so you can understand my words, right? I say you're going to draw a box of stars in assignment 2, you run assignment 2, you see a box of stars, you go, oh, that's what he's talking about. And then you can compare your output, my output, oh, great. I did it right. Okay? So, when you hand in assignments, this is very important. When you hand in assignments by email, text only. Cut and paste text. No zip files, no Word files, no any kind of executable file, text only. Then I can read it anywhere. I can read it quickly. I can see what the problems are very quickly. I don't have to open it up in a different application and save it and all that. All right? When we have assignments in this class, each one is built on the one before it, starting with assignment 2. You only have to send in the new stuff. So if you've already written something and I've given it back to you, then you don't have to hand it in again. You just, otherwise, all that would happen is our programs would be getting exponentially thicker, right? And then I wouldn't be able to carry them. Because you write about this much code in the semester. Some people do it in like 4 or 5 pages, some a little more, some a little less. More is not necessarily better. Okay, the way I work things, after a few minutes, if I remember, and I often forget, I will take a roll. How you doing? You like? I'll take a roll tonight, the attendant, see who's here. Once I've determined that you're here tonight, I will assume that you're in the class for the rest of the semester. I don't drop anybody. Because in these programming classes, there are a lot of individuals who go off and work in the woods by themselves, and then they show up in the last week and say, here's my stuff, does it work? You're smiling because you remember it. Those people go away and they don't come back. And if I drop you, and you come back and say, what's my work? I say, this work looks great, but you're not in the class anymore. You'll be really mad. So, I don't drop anybody. If you want to drop the class, go ahead. I won't drop you. Hey, Noel, how you doing? Did you bring your assignment 9 from C? Oh, well, that was really a long time ago. I moved it down to 9, so I guess you're okay. All right, there is something unusual about my class, at least as far as I know, which is that my classes all come with a lifetime warranty, which means you can come back anytime you want and sit in the class and refresh your memory. Okay, that's a standing offer. And people often do. People will wander in and out. It will seem strange. That's because they pass. And you're welcome to do that not only in this class, but any of the other classes I teach. So you would probably all find 101 a bit quiet, shall we say. But Java, C++, et cetera, advanced Java. Well, advanced Java, if you pass this, then you qualify for advanced Java in the fall. Okay, any questions so far? How many of you are here to add the class because you're not on the list yet? Anybody here to add the class? Okay, there's still room in the class. Okay, the way I work the class is we are going to do, if the class is 2 hours and 41 minutes long, give or take, okay? So what we will do at the beginning is you will have to listen to me more and type less. And then at the end, you will be typing more and listening less. Well, the amount you listen is voluntary, but I will talk less. Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to meet half the class, roughly, half the time, in this room. At the beginning, it will be slightly longer than that. And then the remainder of the time, we are going to meet in the lab on the third floor, where they have computers for it, where you can actually do your homework every night. Were you guys over in the San Fernando trailer? How is it over there, nice? I just heard about the change on Friday, so I'm not surprised if you guys didn't hear about it. And everything I've said so far is repeated in the handout, which just can be found at this internet location. Okay, so what we're going to try and do is we're going to try and keep up with our homework on a daily basis. That is a lot less stressful than you guys having to, heaven forbid, listen to me for 3 hours or 2.5 hours or whatever it is, by the end of the class having forgot what I said at the beginning of the class, and then go home and try and do your homework between 10 o'clock and midnight or whatever, and then, you know, go back to your real life. So what I try to do is I try to do a lab session at the end of every class. That's especially important in this summer semester because it is very hectic. 5 weeks. It's actually more people pass the class with a better grade in the summer than a regular semester because you don't have time to think of anything else but Java programming. How many of you guys program at work? Anyone here program at work? So maybe you can, someone did a really nice project during work for this class a couple, 3 years ago. How many of you are C++ programmers? So you're going to find it very easy. What about, pardon me, C#? Any of you guys seen C# yet? After you know Java, you'll actually know C# if you know what it is. It's Microsoft's rather flagrant total ripoff of the Java language under a different name. And then instead of saying import, they say using, and they had a couple other things. It's very flagrant, so I do wish you would keep your eye out. But you'll know that language at the end of this semester, too, because they're identical. Right? It's like whether you speak England English or American English. They both work in both places. So, you get two languages for the price of one, and for those of you who don't know C++, you're going to have a real boost in terms of understanding both the syntax of C++, which is nearly identical to Java, but C++ has vastly more rules. And you'll also understand object-oriented programming if you don't. How many of you guys have heard of it but don't know what it's about? Oh, you guys all understand object-oriented programming? You don't. Yeah, object-oriented programming is somewhat different. So if you have not done object-oriented programming, well, every once in a while what happens is we go through phases of learning where you'll go, oh, this is really easy, I don't have any idea what's going on, and how did that happen, and then you go, okay, and then this, and then something happened, you go, well, how did that happen, and so on. Because object-oriented programming has things happen implicitly rather than explicitly. That is, you can look in the code, and unless you really understand how the language works, you will not find a place in the code where something gets called. You will say, how did that ever get called? How did that line of code get executed? There is no place in my program that says, execute that function. So there's a lot of these mysteries in object-oriented programming, and we'll clear those up as we go. There is also, heaven forbid, jargon. You have to learn jargon. And I will be speaking what you will consider babble by the fourth week, because I'm talking in Java, object-oriented, Jim Knighton says it this way kind of stuff. And if you haven't been following along, eventually I'll be talking up here, but it'll just be as if the dog was barking in the backyard. All right. You're really lucky you got rid of, you got past all of the really boring stuff. Yes.
I like to ask you about this code. I could have found, this character, GIS, the one big file, the 2 years of working experience. If you don't put this kind of working experience together, how to find it in the code?
Well, no, actually it's not, because I treat everybody as if they haven't a clue, including me.
Yeah, I don't.
See, he's clueless as well. Yeah, would everyone who's clueless raise their hand? Yeah, I approach this from a pretty fundamental level. In fact, if you're an experienced programmer, and especially if you've done some Java and whatnot, you'll be going, uh-oh, I'm in the wrong place. We don't get into the fun stuff until midway. Well, midway is like a week and a half from now or 2 weeks from now. But I start off at a pretty basic part of me on level and work out from there. Because Java actually, if you know the rules of syntax, it's just like learning any language, right? It's got some syntax, it's got some grammar, it's got some keywords, and once you know those, Right, Mrs. Glendale, so we all have had the experience of learning at least 6, if not 7 languages. So, something else I noticed is that you guys are all mushed in the back half of the room. And what you can do when we take a break, which we're going to take after a while, is you can unmush toward the front. I don't like get half the room and you get half the room. We can share it more like come up maybe this far because I work from over in that corner. We're easily defended. Other questions before we get started? Yes? Yes. Oh, book. Yeah, all kinds of stuff on the handout. I didn't get myself a handout, so I'm doing it from memory. Yes, this is the book that's recommended. Can I borrow you for a moment? Oh, well, that's sad. This is the one that's recommended but not required. That's why the bookstore doesn't have it, because I'm asking them to take a chance and they're not risk-taking people. The reason that we have this book, there are a couple of reasons for it. This is Beginning Java 2 by Ivor Horton, for the speaking into my pocket. It's readable. It covers all of the material that we cover in the class up to what is called JDBC, which is Java Database Connectivity, which is where we start off in advanced Java. We learn it in here, we learn about it in here, but you don't actually have to use it in your assignments. So that's why I picked that book. There's another book, which is a brilliant green or blue or whatever color is the current color of it, by Deitel and Deitel, called Java How to Program. We use that in advanced Java, but if you're already familiar with Java, you could start off with that book and use that as a reference. Books in a programming class are reference. So what I do is I keep a reference library in the computer center on the 3rd floor here, which has got all the books that the various publishers sent me. And I just put them into the office there. And then we go up for our lab sessions. You can go in and browse and look through them and see if there's something that's more helpful. You have to bring them back. What my policy on these books is, you take it home, you bring it back, you take it home, you bring it back, just like you would your textbook, so if someone else wants to see it, they can. Don't hoard my books. Yes, sir?
Yes.
Test. Life is a test. Yes. The answer is yes, we have tests. They are also easy. You got 100, right, on the midterm?
I believe so.
Yeah.
And I'm back in the class again, so.
The tests are easy, the assignments are more difficult. Yeah, we have tests in here, but they're kind of tongue-in-cheek tests. That's not the right way to put it. What they are is a calibration. What I do is I give you a midterm, cleverly positioned halfway through the course, where I put down the jargon, the Java speak that I speak in class. Oh, hi, how you doing? Nice to see you again. There's a chair somewhere back there. I put Java speak in all the questions, and I see if you know what I'm talking about. Okay, so it's an opportunity for me to find out what you know and what you don't know, what you understand and what you don't understand. And that gives us another half a semester to catch up. Do the tests count against you in the Book of Life? No. In other words, they're graded, but it's not like an average. I have a very peculiar grading system. So I'm going to explain that to you now, because as students, you always want to know about that sort of thing. Well, actually, in my night classes, a lot of people say, I don't care about the grade, I just want to learn the language. Hooray. Good attitude, because that's our goal here, is that everybody walks out knowing how to do Java programming. What I do on your assignments is, if I keep keep your assignment, that means you got an A on it. If you get it back without a grade on it, that means it's not a keeper, and you're on the treadmill still. Okay? So, the good news is if you finish all of the assignments, obviously you have an A. If you miss a couple, then you probably have a B or a C and so on. If you don't like that, well, that's just the way I've always done it. Okay? So if there is some fundamental, every assignment has a purpose. Okay? And if the assignment that you hand in misses that purpose, then I give it back to you. And you say, well, I know what that means. And I go, I know, but it's not in your program. Because all we do in here is programming, 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 programming. If you want to learn how to speak a language, you're taught. And if you want to learn, you program. Okay? Not that I advocate sitting down at the keyboard and start typing to figure out how the language works, because that doesn't work, right? You have to think. So I divided the course into three parts. Reading, very important part. If it's not that book, it's some book. It doesn't have to be a book. What else can you learn about Java? Internet link favorites, and I may be, it may not be Doc's books, but I think it is Doc's books tutorial. You know you're in the right place because you see little footprints. Have any of you guys gone to the Sun tutorial for Java? You know, you don't have to take this class. You guys can save yourself the money and the parking hassles and all of that. You can just go here and teach yourself. So if they didn't tell you. Yes, sir. Do
you want to do that and then you can call
California
and tell them
I'm going to have to go down? Yes. Well, sort of. What you can do is you can do my 8 assignments, which are really just one assignment. No. It's true. True fact. Which is just one assignment, and I'll explain to you what that assignment is. And then you'll get a grade in here, and then the school can call Cal Poly. If you know somebody at Cal Poly who just wants to ask me, you know, if you are a highly motivated, self-trained Java programmer, I'll be glad to say sure. After you show me your stuff, you know. Speaking of showing me your stuff, do not, under any circumstances, go to the internet to a place like SourceForge or similar. Find a Java program and hand it in to me. That seems to have been turning into a rage of popularity. I'm really clever at figuring out programs that are written by SourceForge people and people who are in my Java class. Because SourceForge does not have any assignments on it which match the description of our class assignments. See how easy it is to tell? So don't do that. I know you guys didn't do that, but I've had people start to do that, and then I get into the embarrassing situation of having to do the light test on their code, where I hold up the source. I think last semester it took me about 5 minutes to find the source code for the assignment that got handed in. Internet's great, isn't it? So, that's enough of that. So, there's reading. That's a very important part of it because I do this, as you can see, I don't have any notes. I do this off the top of my head. I try to tell you everything that I know about the language, and I try to tell it to you in an order where you can learn what I'm talking about and ask questions, and you're welcome at all times to ask questions as we go. But I forget things, or I don't know things. You know, I have students who send me email and go, well, you know, I finally figured out that thing that neither of us could figure out last semester. I just got an email a couple days ago. Because one of the reasons I teach is so I can learn. So I'm always learning about these things. So when you read in the book, you see details, you can say things like, excuse me, but you said this and the book says that. Who's right? Here's the pecking order in the life of the programmer. I'm at the bottom of the heap. Then there's the book, because the book has been written by someone who has editors and help, and they test the programs. Hopefully, they don't always, but sometimes they do. And the source code for this book, for example, is on the internet. They give you the website on the book. Who bats last in the pecking order? The Java compiler. Right? I don't care what it says in the book. I don't care what I say. If the compiler won't compile it, there's something wrong with it. Now, we can yell and scream and say the compiler's broken and I'm going to do it this way anyway, but you'll have to find a cooperative computer to help you. Okay? So, read the book. Second, write the program. You can't learn how to program without writing the programs. We are writing programs in here constantly. I will be coming in here night after night going, oh, here's an assignment, oh, here's an assignment, here's an assignment, here's an assignment. And we're going, whoa, stop, wait. Okay, and then I wait for a while. At the midterm is our kind of our waiting period. Our programming load goes like this. What I do is I have you start out doing some tedious, fiddly little things. And you go, well, this is like, how many of you guys do Visual Basic? Anyone here do Visual Basic? Yeah, see, in the Visual Basic, you know, you do things, you make a little house, smoke comes out the chimney, the doors open and close, and you're really happy. Right? We don't do it that way in here. People have asked me, why don't I do it that way? And then Java programmers would be really happy. I don't want happy programmers. I want bored programmers. Why? If you have a job as a programmer, you have to be able to have the long distance view, right? If you're a programmer, programming from day to day is a tedious business. You've got to love to make mistakes and have a machine tell you you made a mistake, right? Because that happens constantly all day long. You run into problems, you have no idea what the solution is. You figure out the solution and realize that the last 6 weeks were wasted because you went down the wrong path, and so on. So, what I do in this class is I give you the long term. I say, this is where we're headed in a general kind of way, and all of the assignments are here. So there's no surprise assignments. You can see what we're doing, you can see where we're headed, you can see the ideas we're trying to get at, and these are all the building blocks. And what happens is, here is assignment 5. So assignment 5 is fairly challenging, because what we do is we do in assignments 1 and 2 and so on, we're just learning the syntax, and we're just putting together some small pieces, and we're learning how to communicate from one part of the program to the other and control the computer and use the compiler. And all of that, then in assignment 5 we suddenly have to say, oh, we've got to take a piece from here and a piece from here and a piece from here. And we put it all together and make it do something. Well, once you've done that, then you can, if you do those pieces right, where you find out. See, one of the things, why did you do this, is you find out what your mistakes were in the past, because that's what you do as a programmer in the real world anyway, is you go, oh, I just took the wrong turn back there, and we fix things as we go along. We get to five, we put things all together. If you fix all of the broken stuff back here, life's pretty easy. Then the rest of this is the fun stuff, and it gets easier and easier because you're working with interfaces and the boring stuff is all behind the scenes. And then assignment eight really is, if you've done the first seven right, eight is really easy. If you did the first seven wrong, eight is more challenging. But it's not that much more challenging. And you'll find out what all this means as you go. Questions on the assignment? What's the third part of the course? I've done reading. I've done writing. Must be arithmetic. No. What's the last part? The lecture. The reason I don't have the lecture in the computer room is because if I had the lecture in the computer room, you would all be watching television right now and would have missed what I just said. No matter how steely your resolve, when you have that little ball changing colors bouncing around in front of you on the monitor, you're looking at that and you're thinking, oh, hamburger. Right? So that's why I do it this way. Lecture is important because what I do in these lectures, first of all, I tell you what you're going to be learning about, why you're going to be learning about it, what your resources are to learn about it, how it fits in with what you already know, and I get to answer questions that you ask ad hoc as the lecture goes on. Then, I give you an assignment. Actually, I give you the assignment usually early, so you're thinking about it, and you look at the assignment and you go, I don't know how to do this, which is good because then I have your attention, or you go, this is too easy, and then at the break you disappear and the room gets cooler. Okay? Then when you're attentive to that, I explain it to you and I go through the details, you go off, you try the assignment, in this case you go off tonight and try it, and then you go, oh, well, I thought I understood, but I don't understand. Then you come back the next day and you go, I don't understand this assignment, and we have a chance to talk about it, right, after you've done something. Then you go off and you do it again. Now, on the third night, nominally, in the summer session, that is the equivalent of the second week later, that's when it's due. The assignments are due roughly 2 days after I hand them out. But there are only eight assignments. You fill in the other three. There are only eight assignments, and there are 20 days to do them. So you see there's a little bit of slop in the system. Because what happens is some people rush right through them and get everything done right away, and there's other people who take their time. And I don't grade you on anything. I mean, I give you your assignments back and it says A on it or it says no grade, which means you're still in on the treadmill on that one. But your real grade for the course doesn't happen until the last week. Because here's what I've seen go on, is that some people really get it, that, and there's other people that go, I don't get it, I don't get it, I don't get it. Oh, that's obvious. Like that. And I don't know who's who. So I really don't know how you're doing in the language till the end of the semester. Right? You know how these things sometimes you just go, oh, why didn't I see that before that finally breaks through the fog? Now I can do this stuff. And Java just happens to be one of those languages. It's not a hard language. It has peculiarities, but it isn't difficult. It's much easier than, for example, C++, because C++ has a lot of rules, very complicated grammar, lots of mysterious things going on, and it has pointers. What's a pointer? See, you guys are going to be spared having to even know that. A pointer is a way of dealing with variables as their addresses rather than as their values. It's a whole special programming philosophy originating in assembly language, formalized in C and in C++. Very powerful programming technique, but it is not for the timid. Nor is Java, as it turns out. Java is actually an industrial strength programming language. So for those of you who want to know why you would learn Java instead of, say, Visual Basic, well, I would go, I don't know, you can get a job with either language. So I don't know why you would pick one over the other. Why I prefer Java is, first of all, it uses the same syntax as C, which I'm an old C programmer. I've been programming forever, it seems now. It was a long time when I started doing this, and now it's a really long time. I've been doing this a really long time, too. So, for me, the syntax is very familiar, so I like it for that. And I especially like the idea of cross-platform operation. And the programs that you guys write in here, you can literally take those and stick them on a Sun workstation or an SCI or a PC or a Mac, and the program works almost identically on every machine. What are the downsides to Java? Oh, well, I'll just quickly run through a few more upsides. It's got very powerful networking tools, got very powerful graphics tools, got 3D tools now, got audio tools now, MIDI drivers now, all kinds of image formatting now. Distributed databases are easy to do in Java. Lots of things are very easy to do in Java. The downside of Java is it is slow. Well, is it really slow? Well, it all depends on if you can tell the difference on a gigahertz machine between a slow program and a fast program. Back when PCs were 66 megahertz, Java was slow and got a reputation for being slow because it is an interpreted-like language, and we'll go over that after the break. That's okay, I'm on time. There's your chairs over there. Okay, nowadays, machines are fast, memory is cheap, who cares? You really can't tell when you run a Java program or some other program, you can't tell fast from slow. Because the machines are so fast, you wish they would slow down so you could see your font list, right? I try to scroll something on a menu and I go, excuse me, but... Rather you go down the little window thing that's on the side and you go, whoa, I didn't mean to go that far. So the machines are now so fast and memory is so cheap that the speed of the language isn't that big an issue. It used to be. Those times have changed. So the cross-platform operation is very powerful incentive to use it. Why else might you not use it? I don't know. It's easy to do stuff in Java, so I'll just assume you guys want to learn it because you're serious people and you know it well. Okay, any questions before we take a break? After the break, I will show you how Java works, and then I will introduce you to object-oriented programming, whatever that is. I'll throw out some really silly jargon and then show you how it's just ideas you already know about. And then I will show you a demo of what we're going to do upstairs, and then we'll go upstairs. But first, let's get a break. Move around, get your legs back alive. Move your chairs a little closer. Anyone that wants to add to class, if you have your add sheets with you, I'll sign them. Sounds like nighttime in Africa. Okay, you go over to the admissions office, you ask them for an ad slip, you bring it back here, I put a magic number in it and sign it, and then you're ready.
Okay.
A what?
5 minutes.
Oh, whatever you're comfortable with. Hi, how you doing?
Fine,
yeah, yeah. Just wait. Yep. You have your choice of chairs by the third week. Actually, my goal is to have everybody get through every time, but that just doesn't happen. But if you do the assignment, the probability of finishing is much higher than if you don't. And then I'll go on to the fog. Why do you guys want to learn Java? Oh, at least you have a clear-cut incentive for doing your assignment. You're taking it because they wanted to tell Polly or else. Cal Poly?
Yeah.
Ah. Well, here you have some comparative shopping. They may never have had it. See, they probably take it very seriously. And to me, it's like fixing lawnmowers, you know. If you don't fix it, the grass gets longer. Yeah, I don't take these machines very seriously. In fact, in my 101 class on the first day, I put a big D on the board. And I say that stands for disappointment. You better get used to it if you're working with computers. Oh, you want to take it because it's a good programming language. Well, unfortunately, I had nothing to do with it being a good programming language. Yeah, actually, it's very easy to do stuff in it. So. Yeah, what Java is really designed for is what is called middleware. So you wouldn't design, for example, a database engine for the gut level of a networking system and so on in it, but you would use Java to interface between a person and those type of facilities. So it's very easy, for example, to create a network socket. It's very easy to connect to a SQL database, that kind of thing. Very easy to do that. No, actually, Java has an extremely elaborate security mechanism built into it in the virtual machine, which I will talk about momentarily. As soon as my intractable computer becomes tractable again. One of the things you have to get used to, you should all bring some light reading to class, because periodically I have to restart my computer and it is not a new model.
What, you were getting a new one?
Yeah. They told me that it wasn't in the cards for me. Yeah, I could bring my Mac in here. I could bring my Mac in here and have it run Windows on the Mac, and it would be faster than this. Oh, well. So, while we're waiting for this machine to come to life, you hear us talk about the virtual machine. You will see in books and so on, websites, JVM, Java Virtual Machine. You'll also hear about runtime, engine, etc. Those are all the same thing. Okay? The way Java works and the way it becomes cross-platform is Java has a virtual machine, meaning a computer program that pretends to be hardware. So as you know, if you're on an Intel machine or a Motorola machine or an SPI or a Spark or whatever kind of processor you're on, each of those processors has its own instruction set, which means at the assembly code level, you have to rewrite your program as you port them from one machine to another. In addition, each of those machines has their own graphical user interface. That's not a machine-dependent feature, it's an operating system-dependent feature. And each of those graphical user interfaces has its own library of routines that you call to make bits flip and all this, right? Make pictures on the screen. So, what Java did is the idea is to replace all of those hardware, software interfaces with a common interface. So the virtual machine basically sits between your program and whatever operating system you're on, and makes the connection. So if you want to draw a window in Java, you tell Java draw a window, and Java goes and tells the operating system of choice to draw the window, and it does that interpretation for you. That's where things get slowed down slightly. Okay? But as they have developed experience over the last few years with this language, the language is pretty young still, about 10 years old, and it's been in use, meaning that the machines were fast enough to actually have it do something useful for 5 or 6 years, so it's not very old. As they've gained experience with it, they have reduced down, there are about 20 what are called classes, and we'll get into what a class is. There are about 20 classes which are machine dependent, and all of the rest of Java is totally hardware and software independent. So what happens when someone comes out with a newer, faster, sweller machine is the people who are writing the core Java go out and modify those 20 calls, those 20 classes, to plug into the new operating system changes, and the rest of Java sits on top of it unchanged. In Java, you have source files, that's the actual program that you type out. Those go through the Java compiler. And actually Java, you know, one of the things you can do is you can actually run Java on a command line with Java C, that's the Java compiler. That produces what is called bytecode. which to that virtual machine, that is the equivalent of an executable set of instructions. Bytecode is the equivalent of machine language for the virtual machine. So when you've compiled your Java program, you produce something called bytecode. Okay. The rules in Java are a bit odd, so you have to get used to this right away. Source files end in .java. Okay. And when you learn how to write your programs, we are going to be developing what are called classes. That's a programming unit in Java. And every class is in its own file that ends with .java and begins with the class name. And we'll actually go up in the computer center tonight and learn about this with our hands, not our heads. So just pay attention for the moment. What goes to the left of the dot here is the name of the class. Java is a case-sensitive language. Extremely important. Remember that. Case-sensitive. Upper and lower case mean different things. So if you call something arg, A-R-G with a capital A, and then you try to use it with arg, a little A-R-G, you're going to find yourself saying arg, because it won't work. Okay? And what would the file name be where your source code would go? It would go in arg.java, according to what I just said. And I'll show you how that all works here in a minute. Okay, there are some rules, which are informal rules, which I highly recommend you following. Informal rules are the classes that you make up in this class. Start with a capital letter. And all of the variables in your program and the functions in your program, which in Java are known as methods, start with lowercase letters. It's just so it's very easy when you're looking through a program to figure out what part of speech you're looking at. And we'll go into that as well. In any case, so I create a source file. Let's say I was doing assignment one. I call it a1.java because I minimize my typing. I compile this program, and it compiles successfully. It will result in a file called a1.class. In Java, when you see a file that ends in .class, that means that has bytecode in it. If you look at it with a word processor, you can see what bytecode looks like. It just looks like assembly language, sort of. And this is what I would actually run if I was on a command line, like in DOS or in Unix command line. I would say Java A1. Here I would say Java C A1 .java, and then here I could say Java A1. And I think it figures out the dot class. If it doesn't, type A1.class. I can never remember. I sit down, I do it, I remember after I do it. So far, so good? So this is what we do in this class, pardon me. If we write a bunch of these, for example, in your assignment one, I'm going to actually show you exactly how to do it. It's a freebie because assignment one really is get out there and learn how to use the environment you're on. How many of you are going to use the college computer? There you go. How many of you are going to use the college computer sometime? There you go. How many of you have your own Java compiler at home? How many wish you had your own Java compiler at home and are just waiting for me to tell you how to get it? Okay. And how many of you are none of the above? Okay. The reason I'm asking this is because some people take this class They don't have Java at home. They wish they did have Java at home, and then they wait until like the fourth week, and they go, oh, I didn't do the assignments because I kept waiting for my Java to arrive, and it didn't arrive, and now what should I do? What should they do? I don't know what to do in that situation. Work fast. There are free Java compilers out on the internet. Forte by Sun is one free Java development environment. I cannot speak to its strengths or weaknesses, but it's free. That's a strength, kind of. Okay, Borland, bless their hearts, offered JBuilder 6 Personal. And I think you can also get old copies of JBuilder 5 from their legacy. They actually run a legacy website where they give away legacy code for free. So you can get JBuilder 5 Personal, JBuilder 6 Personal, and so on for free. JBuilder 6, we actually have a license for it here at the college, but it's a little bit confusing to use for new people. So what I've done is I've had the college stick with JBuilder 3. We give up some of the new Java functionality. There are a few swanky things you can do, but you don't need to do them. And you can easily live without them in exchange for the freedom from aggravation in developing code. So what we have upstairs is JBuilder 3. Last semester, I made a bunch of JBuilder 3 CDs to give to students to use at home because Borland doesn't support it anymore. They don't have it on their legacy code website anymore. It's gone but not forgotten. It turns out it's easy to use. That's its main strength. So if you're just learning to program, JBuilder 3 is a good solution. Using the college computers is a good solution. Learning how to do it on the college computers and then doing it at home is a good solution. However, of the 7 CDs I made last semester for people to pass around, only 2 of them came back home. So I think, and then I think someone took one of those. I think I had the one you brought back.
I made a couple of copies, I think.
Well, see, those weren't.
Well,
in any case, I can try making some more. If I pass them out, please bring them back. Okay? CD burners are cheap. CD blanks are cheap. Go make your own. Because I get tired of making these CDs for people. Don't I sound weary? Yes, sir. I don't like it or not like it. I haven't used it. Forte is cheap, free, right? You can bring in your Forte CD. We can see if it works. We can see how it works. Okay. In any case, getting your development environment to work is absolutely essential right now. So we're going to figure out how to do it upstairs tonight for JBuilder 3. If you have some other development environment, have at it, but have at it right away. Don't waste time, because this class really does move very fast. Okay, almost surprisingly fast. When we get to the midterm, we go, huh, it seems like only a couple of weeks ago we were at assignment 1. Okay, object-oriented programming. I am going to give you some object-oriented programming spiel, show you some of the words and how they work, what I'm talking about. Then I'm going to show you some examples. Then we're going to go upstairs and try it in anger up in the lab. Now, I have to warn you that the lab that we have upstairs, they may open 2 rooms for us, but only 1 for sure. It's only got 30 chairs in it, 30 computers. Maybe you have more chairs, but they don't have computers. For tonight, when we're first starting, if I have more than 30 people, we'll just work some people in the open lab, and I'll kind of wander around. you can actually get assignment one done tonight. And you don't even know what it is. You haven't even looked at it. So how's that for confidence? Okay. Object-oriented programming. There are four key concepts. Encapsulation. Like putting a shell around a nut. That's all we're talking about. Okay, what gets encapsulated in Java are variables and functions, and in functions in Java are called methods. Okay? And the encapsulation mechanism, in terms of what you physically see on the screen, is you might see something like that open curly bracket, that open curly bracket, that's the encapsulating mechanism. These are called the scope operators. What? Open, open? Well, open, close. They come in pairs. Left and right, clapping hands. Yeah, so open curly bracket, close curly bracket, that makes a capsule. And in fact, this would be what you would find in your source file, more complicated probably, called A1.java. The basic programming unit in Java is a class. This keyword here, public, which you'll see all through the semester, is what's called an access specifier, and we'll learn about that in a moment. Okay? But this, actually, I could compile this. It won't run because there's no place for execution to begin. There's nothing for it to do. So if I tried to run this program, I would get a runtime error that said, I can't find name. So the next rule is that this capsule here is going to have a place to start execution. We'll get into that in a moment. Data hiding. All variables and methods have a scope. These are the scope operators. Any variable that I declare, whatever that means, oh look, there's one, there's a place in memory called I, which is an integer, whole number. The scope of this variable, meaning where it can be used in the program, that's all it means, where I can use it in the program, is from that brace to that brace. And outside those two braces, it is hidden. In this case, it's partially hidden, and we will learn the rules about data hiding. These access specifiers tell us what level a variable is hidden from, and we'll learn about that as we go along. So it can be completely hidden, partially hidden, fully open for use by anybody in the program. But this variable right here is available and is not hidden from here to here. Okay? And we'll learn what that means and how it operates. Oh, look, there's a curly brace. And there's another curly brace. So what do you suppose those mean? Yeah, it's a capsule. Java function is called a method. It's a kind of object-oriented. The object-oriented people, they could have chosen procedure or subroutine or function, which are all in common use, and they said, no, our philosophy is different, so we're going to call it a method. But it's the same thing. It's a block of code that you have to call it in order for it to do something. Okay? It's just, in this case, it's just going to exist. But the important thing here is, look, there are those scope operators. This is another program capsule. The scope of J is just from the beginning to the end of this function. That's called a local variable. This one is called an instance variable, and that's one of the things we're going to learn about in our first program. Okay? So this variable can be used anywhere from that phrase to that phrase, which includes inside here. But this variable can only be used from that phrase to that phrase, which doesn't include anything else. So it's local. It can only be used there. So it's completely hidden. Right? If I had a second function, there's a function called f. I can say I equals 3 here with this statement literally. And notice in Java, every statement ends with a semicolon. Okay? What this program statement says is take the value 3 and store it in I. Which I? This one. I could even take this and put it at the end of my code block, and it's still, see the scope is still those braces. The compiler will still know I'm talking about this variable. For C programmers, that's a bit odd, because in C programming, the compiler goes through everything once, and if it finds an I here, and it hasn't been defined anywhere, declared anywhere, compiler croaks. Says, no, I can't do that. Java has a multi-path compiler. So it will say, it says, well, I haven't heard about I yet, but I'll just wait and see if I get to the end of that scope and find it. Okay. So I can use that. But if I change this to this, no, I can't do that. Because J is now going to be, it can't get there because it's hidden. There is no J in here. In fact, what I could do, and what I often do, I can put another J in here, see, because that's totally independent of that. The compiler doesn't care. So you can use variables over and over and over. Variable names. The only ones that you care about are the ones that are, the scope is the whole class. Right? This one, I can't have a variable called I in here, because it'll mask this one. But I can have a J here and a J there, it's okay. Okay? This is what a Java program looks like. This Java program will actually compile and run, but it won't do anything. The next thing, we have something called inheritance. We're going to learn about that pretty early on in the class. And the idea behind inheritance is that these classes are actually data types. Okay? In Java, there are 8 primitive data types. What's a data type good for? Holds value. It's a storage location. Okay? There are 8 primitive data types. Byte, char, int, short, long, symbol Boolean. Maybe I left something out there. Who knows? You can look them up on my handout one on my website. These primitive data types are just storage locations in memory of a fixed size, 2 bytes or 1 byte or 4 bytes, and then they are interpreted as either integer numbers or true or false in the case of Boolean, or floating point numbers, numbers with a fractional part. Okay? They're just simply storage locations. All the rest of the data types in Java are called derived data types, which are these classes. So when you write a class in Java, you're actually writing a data type. What's that? Yeah, it's like a record in COBOL or C or Pascal or whatever, Visual Basic. It's like a record. It's a group of variables. And, because it's object-oriented programming, variables and the methods that operate on those variables. That's the whole idea behind Java, or behind object-oriented programming, is what we encapsulate are variables, storage locations, and the functions that operate on those. What good is that, pray tell? Well, it has the following useful thing that you will be familiar with. I have a window on a computer screen. That is an object. That is a class. And what that class has in it is it has the data, which is the picture on the screen, along with the methods that let you do things like put the mouse there and drag the picture around. Okay? So those two things come together, and all you have to do to get those things is a window. There's a data type called frame in Java, and you say frame f equals new frame, and you've got a window, along with all of the behavior that comes with a window. Well, what comes with it for free? Well, all those little doohickeys up in the corner. Maybe some scrolling things or some resizing things and so on. You can tell it what kind of a window. Okay? Then with this idea of inheritance, if you can say, okay, you gave me this window and I was happy with it, but I wanted to do more, and what you can do in Java is you can say extend that class, inherit from it, it does everything that this window does and more. Okay? And the beauty of that is what? All you have to do is write the and more part, the rest of it's written for you. And if you don't think that's a bonus, go back and try and write a window program in C. And then you'll go, oh, I think I like this Java stuff. Or this object-oriented, or even writing a window program in C++ is easier, but not as easy. And then, of course, if you go to Visual C++, or JBuilder, or Forte, or any of the other Java environments, they're like Visual Basic. They let you draw a window and put buttons in it and so on. But unfortunately, you guys who know Visual Basic know the buttons don't do anything unless you write the rest of the code, right? So we just start off here, write the rest of the code, then we'll learn how to write a button to hook to it. Okay, that's inheritance. Inheritance buys us a lot, and what you're going to do in this class is you're going to design your own hierarchy, whatever that means. That means you're going to have to learn how to design a hierarchy, and I am sorry, you have to make it up yourself. One of the really challenging parts of this class, which surprises me, is people have trouble figuring out a hierarchy. Well, you might think, I'm not surprised, because you're going, I don't know what a hierarchy is, and I don't know how to make it up. And even after I explain it, you know, I don't know how to make it up. So that becomes kind of a barrier. We're going to get past that barrier. We're all going to be successful at designing hierarchies. And the last thing we're going to learn about another feature of object-oriented programming, polymorphism. Many forms. Okay, so we have like the idea of a window, and you can have windows with scroll bars and windows without scroll bars and windows that resize and don't resize and have titles and don't have titles and closed boxes and don't have closed boxes and so on. But they're all windows, right? And the beauty of polymorphism in object-oriented programming languages is that you can take a hierarchy of objects, whatever that means, and you can store variables from that hierarchy that are a mixture into a single data type, and then through that single data type call many different places in a program. And the computer program on the fly figures out what kind of a window you have. So it knows, without you telling it, that it knows how to close, or knows how to resize, or knows how to scroll, or knows how to do something special. And all you say is, you know, W dot do something special, and it does it. And you don't have to tell it what kind of a window it is. Well, we save that for later after we have some fuel to throw on the polymorphism fire, right? That'll all come and make sense to you, hopefully, by the end of the semester. This one here, we kind of set it aside, but every once in a while I will point out to you, oh, this here is possible because of polymorphism, and when we write that part of our program, you'll become more sensitive to how it works. But it's a very powerful feature, because it really allows you to generalize your code and get an awful lot of bang for a very small amount of typing on the keyboard, which is the ultimate goal in a programming class, right, is to learn a language so well that you don't have to ever use it, because you've written one program that does everything. Okay? So we'll learn about how those work. Now, let's talk about objects briefly, and then I will show you quickly on the computer what we're going to do upstairs, and then I will have you, while it's fresh in your mind, go upstairs and do it. Assignment one in this class, which you will find when you go onto the internet, if you haven't already, it says, write a program with two classes. One of the classes is going to be the startup class. This is known as the startup class. Why? Because it has public static void main in it. You can actually have many, many, many classes with main in it, and then you're responsible for saying which class to start up with. But if you just stick in each of your assignments to one class with main in it, then you don't have to worry about which one. And what I do is I say, oh, assignment one, I'll call A1 and put main in that, and then I know from looking outside at my folder where the program begins. So I say make two classes. This is just one. One of them is a startup class, and the other is a class that has three variables in it. I'll just call it B. And it's going to have three variables of three of the primitive data types. Well, you don't even know what the primitive data types are, right? Excuse me, I can't do this tonight. Well, actually, you can, because if you look at handout one, it shows you, or you can just look at what I'm doing up here. Int I float F, what's another one? We'll call it something creative like C. Okay? Three variables and a method to set those variables and a method to print them out. So, I'm going to put a method in here. What's a method look like? It looks like that. Well, in this case, We'll make it public. This is the access specifier. Skipping one position, the word void means it has no return value. Methods or functions can either return a value or not. You don't have to say return in them, however, unless you do return a value, because the closing brace means go back where you came from. And in this method, I'm going to set I equals 3, F equals 1.234, C, semicolon, semicolon, C equals, okay, let's just look at the syntax of this. There's the opening and closing brace. This is the method definition line. Access is public, meaning that there's nothing hidden about it. It can be called by anybody. Void means it has no return value. Method 1 is the name of the method. So when I go to call it, that's the word I use. There's nothing in the parentheses. This is a place where something called arguments or parameters go. See, this one over here has them. That's a capital S, by the way. This has an argument. We'll learn about those shortly. This doesn't. Okay, but that's where they go. Then there's the scope operator that they start here and here. Now I've defined it. And a second method that prints them out. I'm not going to return anything. Now you could call this one set them and print them. Because these names can be anything you want. You as a programmer have control over certain aspects of your code. You can call these anything you want. You can't change that. You can't change that. Well, you can leave it off. You can change it to private. You can change it to protected. We'll learn about those when we go on. But for right now, this is the thing you have control over. If you can be clever and call it set them, for example, and call it with print them. Then you'll know exactly what happened. And then in here, I will have a line. I will just give you one system. That is a capital S, which means by convention it's a class. We'll learn about that as we go along. Dot out dot print line I. Good. Now I should see the number 3 pop up on the screen, and then you can do your own, leave you a little bit of imagination there. And then what I'm going to do here, so we don't get those mixed up. So, there's the scope of the class B. Those are the 3 variables. There's one method, there's 2 methods. Life couldn't be better. I compile these 2 programs. I run them and nothing happens. Why? I never call a method. Well, I have a problem here. I can't call those methods. Why? No, I can call them. How come I can't call them? Well, I could do that, but there's even an easier way to do it. Here we're going to go and learn the most silly word in object-oriented programming. I have not created an instance of this class. Huh? Therefore, I can't use any of its methods or variables. Here's the trick. In object-oriented programming, I don't have any objects in here. I don't have anything. What am I talking about? This is a data type. Just like int. If I asked you to print the value of I here, you'd say, I can't print the value of I. I don't have an I. right? Well, if I try to call method 1 and method 2, the compiler is going to go, you don't have a method 1 and a method 2. What I have to do is this. I have to use this data type. It's a data type I just made up. And you're going to make one up just like it tonight. B, that's the data type. C, just like int I, int is the data type, I is the variable. I'll make it a little b. Okay. Now I've declared the variable, but I still don't have one. And now we see the fundamental difference between primitive data types and derived data types. Primitive data types, if I declare it, I don't have to say anything more about it. The compiler knows what memory I need and where I need it. But when I use these derived data types, I have to do, and here comes the word, are you ready for this? I have to instantiate them. Isn't that a silly word, instantiate? That object-oriented programmers just love stuff like that. And so I'm going to instantiate this variable. There. Now I have a b. Before I didn't have one. That little b, that's an object. And that object has those three variables and those two methods. That's all we're talking about when they talk about object-oriented programming. It's just a programming unit. That's the data type. Now I have one, that's an object. Yes, sir. This is the variable name. That's the data type. The big B refers to this. And the little b is my local name just for this instance. See what the word instance means? It means this is an instance of that class. I could have called this Chuck or anything else. I just picked little d so I could remember what I called it. Well, speaking of calling things, let me do the roll here. Because I always forget this on the first night, and then people drop and say, well, you never said, because you never took the roll. So, Adam. Miriam. Avakian. Kratpa. Brown. Emily Chen, yes. Victor Chen, Young Chin Chen, Chun, Eldayer, Iraji, Tanakiga, Garcia, yes. Gatchel, Caribbean, Hasruni, Hoyseth, Horiba, Jugal, Kasari, Lopez, and as you can see, we have names from all of the planet's language groups in here, so please, when I mispronounce your name, just tell me how you would say it, and then I'll learn it. Mancobila, Marina, Manrique, O, Petrosian, Palladian, Reyes, Salvacion, Santos, Santa Karenian, Suda, Sayed, Pan, Tovmathian. Oh, come on, there's more people here than are on the list. Well, we'll see. Ui, is it Ui or what? Is that right? Ui? Young, Okay, anyone I didn't call who did sign up and hope they'd be on the list? Okay, who didn't answer? Adam didn't answer. Okay, that's right. Any questions before I finish up this and show you the quick example? Yes, sir.
I would just like to make one comment, something that I didn't realize until several weeks ago the last time.
Okay.
Captain Marty, right, is the same as his I, and is a statement that stands alone by itself.
Yes.
And then, new B is the same as setting the very honest to
correct.
And that's something that should have saved me for several weeks.
Right.
This
by itself is a declaration. It's simply a declaration of a variable. Data type on the left, there is a space, variable name on the right. Yes, sir.
Right.
Yeah, these are declarations of variables. But because these are primitive data types, I don't have to instantiate them. I don't have to say equals new something. It's taken care of for me. But if I use a class variable, and B is a data type of the class, I have to use the new operator to actually have it come into existence. This much of the statement merely says what it is. This, that's now.
Helpful, right.
We did that,
and then the next line is B equals, right. That, to me, was a pivotal watershed kind of moment.
Well, get wet. Okay, now here's what happens, is later on you will say to me, well, why don't you just put it up there? And I'll say, well, because Frank said put it down here.
At least once.
Okay, so this declares it. This instantiates it.
Right. We're new instantiation.
This line of code here. This assignment. This new is actually an operator. And that operator says, go out onto the disk, find the code for that class, load it somewhere. And call what's called a constructor method, which we'll learn about in a couple of nights, and do that too. But I don't have that, so right now all I know is that if I didn't do this, I wouldn't have one of those to work with. Okay? So this actually brings this code into being. Now, if I want to call these, this still doesn't call any of those methods or use any of those variables, right? If I want to call one of these methods and use one of those variables, I say something like b dot this line here says go over to the code that's in the file b.java, go to the method called method1 and execute these statements bit in order. At this level, this is just like procedural programming. That is, when I call this line of code here, says go here, do those three statements, and then come back. This statement here says, go to this place in the code, do whatever statements are there, and then come back. And then I have the closing brace of main, and that says this program's over. So this program begins where main begins, and it ends where main ends. Now, what you have to learn is you have to learn that this is in A1.java, this is in B.java. So you're writing your code all semester long, piece by piece, making up these new class files. You compile it, you test it, you run it. It works, you go on. It doesn't work, you fix it. And that's what you're going to do the whole semester. Aren't you glad it's short? What's that? No, see, in Java, everything in a class is within the class. There's no code outside of it. So there isn't anything. I can't put a variable out here. If you put a variable out here, you get an error. If you put an executable statement outside of a method, you get an error. The idea of global, not global, comes in terms of public, protected, private, and package access. These access specifiers control data hiding and levels of data hiding. Any variable I declare, like these variables, are the equivalent of global to class D. They can be used anywhere. What? If I had like a class C? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how I talk to each other. If I have a class C in here and a class B, I can talk to each other by calling the C methods and the B methods. I still didn't answer your question. Well, we'll see, pardon that, as we go along, what you can and can't do. Yes. Two different files, right. Every class is in its own source file. I'll do that right now. You have to pardon me, I'm going to use my remote control. I will. We have to get past the first one before we worry about passages and whatnot. But we'll see that it turns out to be a critical thing. Now let's see if I've done the steps right. I have it. This is like starting an old car, getting the video to work. And I need retraining once a semester. Okay. Now you can do the light. You guys, before we go upstairs, you're supposed to get a floppy disk so you have something to work with. Because if you don't have a floppy disk, you miss the first step. And if you miss the first step, you're cooked for the rest of the semester. These are very garishly colored, aren't they? Okay, so what we'll do upstairs is I will show you where, once we figure it out, you'll start up JBuilder 3, which is a development environment. It's just one of many. I find it very easy to work with. You will at some point put a floppy disk into the computer as well. Now, the critical first step, get this right or we will be in grief. There is something at the top of the screen, project, default properties, and you set that to the A drive. in both boxes. And what that means, and then just get into the habit of upper lowercase, even though on the dock it doesn't make any difference. And what this means is this means that your source code and your class files will be stored relative to the A drive. Otherwise, they will be put off somewhere on a hard drive somewhere. You may not be able to find them. Okay? Got that? From now on, when I make a new project, it will automatically go to the floppy disk. If you're working at home, it's going to be wherever you installed your development environment, and one of the little infuriating things you're going to have to get over through the semester is how your development environment handles the paths to the directories on your disk. But if you use a floppy disk, you can't go wrong because everything's sitting right there. Okay? So I say, okay. Now, what you will do tonight is you will say, new project. Now, project isn't a Java programming thing. It's a JBuilder thing, or a Forte thing, or whatever environment you use to work on Java in. It's just an organizing tool. They're helping you. Okay? If you don't have a project, like let's say you're just working on DOS command line or Unix command line, you just make a directory and you do all your work in that directory and you'll see where it fits into the scheme here. But for JBuilder, the other development environments, they usually have an organizing tool called a project. So I say new project. And that gives me a little window that asks me what I want to call it. Now, you will recognize this syntax as being, this is an A drive, A colon backslash. Well, they have two backslashes here. We'll find out what that's all about. Then they have untitled one. That's a folder name. The way Java works is all of the source files in a given directory on the disk are what are called in a package. All a package in Java is a directory level. So in this case, this untitled one here is actually going to end up being a package name, and we'll see that appear in the program. All we're talking about is files in a certain folder. It's a fancy name for files at a certain level of directory. What I'm going to do, out of habit, is because I'm doing A1, I will call the folder A1. Then I can find it later on. See, you guys are going to say, you know, I can't find my Frisbee class. And I'm going to go, well, where did you put it? Well, I don't know. It's in one of these folders here. Well, if you don't know where it is, then the compiler won't know where it is. Okay? So keep things orderly. And my project name, I will also call it A1. So I have a folder called A1, and then inside there's going to be this project file called A1. Still no Java. I say finish. Okay, so here I have a project, and there's an HTML. This HTML is actually the code that draws this screen. Okay. If I looked inside the HTML, I'd see all these words in there with the setting, the fonts, and all that. But it's still no Java. Now I'm going to do Java. File, new, class. I'm going to create a class file, because remember, Java is class. Those are the programming units, just like a source file, .cas and Pascal, .c or .ctt and C, .for and Fortran. I'm going to make a Java program. I'm going to make a startup class. I am going to call it A1. Just like on the board. Now, they asked me if I want to generate a parameterless instructor. Do you guys know what that is? No. So turn that on. Okay? But generate a main function. Do you guys know what a main function is? Yeah, that's cool, right? That's our startup class. We want that, so we'll turn that on. Okay. But RoboProgrammer wrote the program for us. That's nice. That's helpful. A little less helpful is you see these two lines here? Invoke standalone false, invoke standalone true. I don't know what that means, so I'm going to throw it away. Right? Simplify, simplify, simplify. See this line where it says A1, A1 equals new A1? You all know what that is, right? What's happening there? It's making an instance of itself, right? But today I don't need an instance of itself. You will, but right now you don't. So I'm just going to toss it. What I'm going to say instead is I'm going to say BB equals new B. Now notice what JBuilder does here. This B is red. What red means is it means I don't know what you're talking about. You've made a mistake. There is no class B. And sure enough, the compiler is right. There is no class B. Way down the line, we'll see there's places where we can fool JBuilder and we can have classes and it still has them red. But okay, so what we have to do, see, if I compile this program, here's the only two buttons you need to know. The yellow folder with the little bits under it means make bytecode, means compile it, and the green triangle means run it. So I push the yellow folder, I compile it, oh, failed with errors, and down here it says class B not found. And see, it says A1.A1. But if we look up at the top, look at this line here, package A1. That's the package I was talking about. And if I go over to my floppy disk, there's the folder. That's the package called A1. And look, there's inside it, there's my project, and there's that HTML file. And if I come out here and I remember to save my A1.java, oh, look, there's the Java file, too. That's my source code, that's the project, and this is the thing that draws the screen that tells you who I am. But I need a class B. So, I come up here, I say new class B. Still don't know what that parameterless constructor is. Do I need main? No, but notice B is still in package A1. That was because I set things up at the beginning to all be in that package. I say OK. Now I have class B, and I showed you on the board what code to type in. And I, close F, C, public void method 1. I equals 3. Does I have to be 3?
No.
So there. Now I've made a method. Now what I'm going to do, which you guys will forget to do in your excitement, is I'm going to compile it to make sure I don't have any mistakes. Okay? And look, I get an error. Possible loss of precision required float. In Java, the default size for floating point numbers, that is fractional numbers with a decimal point, is type double. So if you type in a constant 1.234, that's data type double, which is a different storage class. Okay. It's still a floating point number, meaning a number with a decimal point. So I can either change this number here, put the letter F in, or I could have changed this word here to double. Either one would work. Okay? So constants in Java, because Java is designed for machines with big address buses and whatnot, it defaults to the larger data size. Similarly, on characters, that char C, in Java, these character constants are Unicode, not ASCII. What's Unicode? Oh, you guys are so old-fashioned. What's ASCII? Numbers that mean what? Letters or symbols. What letters or symbols? What alphabet? No, the Romans didn't have computers. What's A stand for in ASCII? American Standard Code for Information Interchange. It's an old-fashioned thing when only computers were here in the United States and the computers only spoke English. All times change, don't they? How many of you guys speak languages that have more than 26 characters? Yeah, and you get to those extra characters and now you have gone on beyond ASCII. Unicode has 2 bytes per character. Right? So you can do hiragana. Right? You type 2 strokes and you get 2 bytes. And you, right? So, Unicode. Java is designed for the internet. Java is designed for international customers. Java is designed to incorporate most languages. I say most languages because it still only goes to 65,000 characters, and we know that there are more than 65,000 characters. However, that's not bad. Okay, it's a big improvement over 127. So just be familiar with that when you see Unicode being referenced. They're talking, and Java is very easy to implement the menus and so on in the various international character sets. It's designed to do that quickly and easily. Okay, so little aside there. Now we do the second method, public void method 2. Then we'll find out what all this is about in a bit. Now I'm just going to put in the error which is most commonly encountered on night one. So there's my method. I compile it and I get an error. Cannot access system.out, neither class nor source. What did I do wrong? That'll be a capital S. Okay, now the syntax of that actually looks like for people who have programmed enough. That's like for records, accessing records, right? Record dot, record dot, record dot, field, whatever. That's the same kind of syntax. In any case, now I compile my program. I go back over to A1, which is my startup class. I run it. Bummer, nothing happened. Why? Yes, sir? No, it figures that out for me. Why didn't it do anything? I'm so disappointed. Well, all right, I'll save it and run it. Save all, save everything and run it. Bummer. I'm so disappointed. What's that? Yeah, I got to call a method. Just because I have a B there doesn't mean I'm going to do anything with it. Right? Yeah, you go sit over there and I'll tell you if I want you for something. Yeah, I've got to call a method. That's a very common thing and you can spend a side note. do not hesitate to send me email when you're having trouble. You can spend an hour on a problem like that, which isn't a problem. You just didn't call the method because you didn't know to, because you're just starting. You're going to get later on, you're going to do something, you're going to leave a semicolon out, you're going to put an apostrophe in the wrong place. Some fiddly little thing, you will spend hours beating your head on the desk or the keyboard. Don't do it, just send an email. Say, look, here's the code, if I got this error at this line, what's it mean? And I send an email back to you in a remarkably quick time, like within a week, or two, that says you left an apostrophe out or something. So, don't waste a lot of time wrestling with your... Now, this is nice. See, when I said do that method, it gives me a list of all this stuff that's available to me. And I can just go down and click it, and it types it for me. So you should learn about these robo-typing things. Page method 2, and it types the line for me. Now I can go ahead and run the program. It compiles it. The environment's noticed that it hasn't been updated. 3, 1, 2, 3.4A, control C to quit. Okay? This window here is called the Java console. For the first 3 or 4 assignments, we work on the Java console and we make our own windows. This is just like a DOS window. No, I don't want to do that. I want to control C to leave it. Now, if that window comes up and disappears, under Project, Properties, and I'll go over this with you upstairs, Run Debug C, Close Console Window on Exit. Turn that off. You want the console window to stay in control C to get out of it. If something really bad happens, we can have it go to the execution log and then we can look at it quietly. But normally you just say console window and you leave those things turned off. There's the A drive, we know about all of that. Program done, you guys are ready to program. Okay? And you can get a little walk in, a hike upstairs and whatnot. Normally I'll try and get you out of here in time for anyone that wants to get coffee to get it. Now, here's the rules for upstairs. There are no rules. Well, sort of. We're the only class normally that's up there. They have kindly left the lab open for us to use it. At 11 minutes after 9, they want to start shutting things down because the guy who's up there is our prisoner. Okay, he can't go until everything's turned off and tidied up. So at 11 minutes after 9, well, at 5 minutes after 9, I'm going to say it's time to save your stuff and get ready to go. At 11 minutes after 9, I'm going to say it's time to go goodbye. And that means goodbye. Now, as you go, anyone that's working upstairs today to try this out, get a disc. That's what these are here for. Yeah.